Okay, here we go. Okay, our next presenter is going to be Dr. Amy Wright from Auburn University, and she's going to talk about your CV. So this is what you have to do before you go up for tenure and promotion. So, Amy.
All right. first thing I'll say is that I was asked to give you a reminder that you can sign up to have your CV reviewed. So if you have copies of your CV, you can just go to registration and sign up. And there have been several volunteers that have committed some of their time. They'll spend about 15 minutes with you, and they'll go over your CV with you. So I definitely encourage you to do that. So I'm happy to be talking to you today a little bit about ways to build your CV. What's interesting about this is many of the things that I'm going to talk about, Dr. Clark just talked about. Because they're so closely related, right? You're building your CV with the thought that you're going for promotion, you're going for tenure, and ultimately you're going for promotion to full professor. So there's a lot of similarities between what he talked about and what I talked about. One of the things that my talk does have that his doesn't have in that is pictures. And the first, not pictures of your CV, but the first picture I have is one that I found for the intellectual haven that is Twitter, and it's from a site that is, well, I have a strict policy against profanity in my professional talks, Dave, so this is from a Twitter site called Stuff Academics Say. Don't trust academic career advice from anyone over 30. So I'm 29, so you shouldn't have any problem hearing what I have to say. So just a little bit of my personal perspective, kind of where I'm coming from with what I want to talk to you about building your CV. I feel like I've gotten some good perspective over the last 3 years being in the dean's office. We've interviewed a lot of faculty positions over the last few years. Just last year, we interviewed for 14 faculty positions. If you think of each faculty position, there were 3 to 4 applicants. I reviewed the CV of each of those applicants and met with them and to get a sense of their qualifications for that position that they were applying for, that faculty position. So that's a lot of time, but that's a great problem to have. I also serve every other year as the co-chair of the Promotion and Tenure Committee for the College of Agriculture, and so there I also see a lot of packets going up for promotion and tenure. So I bring my words to you today from many hours spent reviewing these packets and reviewing these CVs that have been put forward for jobs. But again, you will see some similarities in what I have to say. So the first thing I really want to stress that we really look for, especially when you're going for promotion and tenure, but even when you're applying for a job, is that you have demonstrated scholarship. Okay, I want to emphasize that word, not just activity, right? You haven't just been busy, but you've actually generated scholarship in your areas of appointment. Okay, if you're applying for a faculty position that has an extension component, you should probably have some extension experience. When you're getting ready to go up for promotion and tenure, you need to have scholarship in all the areas related to your appointment. If you have a teaching appointment, you didn't just show up and teach your class. Okay, that's not scholarship, that's activity. But you developed some new teaching materials. You developed some innovative teaching methods. You developed a new course. You developed new opportunities for students. You mentored undergraduate students in research. Likewise, for extension, there are ways to have scholarship in extension as well. Peer-reviewed publications and extension, there are lots of opportunities for that. So making sure that your area of appointment, just like Dr. Clark said, all those areas are met, and not just with activity, but with scholarship, and it should be proportional to your split. So if you have a 75% research appointment, but all of your activity is over here in teaching, that's not going to cut it. So when it comes time for promotion. And so you really want to make sure that you've got the right area of focus, depending upon your area of research, should be a mix of basic and applied research. We're generally in the field of agriculture, so just by our very nature, even when we do basic science, it has an application. So we want to be able to demonstrate that. And then just as Dr. Clark said, keep in mind you're always looking forward, you're looking ahead to the time that you go up for promotion and tenure. You're going to need letters of recommendation that can evaluate your P&T packet, and they should be able to address those areas of appointment. And, you know, as you're engaged, hopefully awards will follow, and so those are external. That's another external way of recognizing your accomplishments. Now, what about service? So here's another Twitter account that is Associate Deans. It has a clever handle, which I also had to block out. You can use your imagination. Did you hear about the non-publishing grade teacher who did all the service we asked for and who made tenure? Me neither. So, you know, you can do all the service you like, but if you haven't met your areas of appointment, you won't be successful. Now, you need to do some service because it's a very important way to be engaged, but you need to be strategic. So think about ways that service can support your appointment. So if you have a research and teaching appointment, what are some service areas that you can be involved in that have to do with research? Maybe it's chairing a research session at ASHS. Maybe it's serving on some review panels. When I first started out, my first academic appointment was 80% teaching, 20% research. I wanted some university service. I said, all right, I've got on the university graduation committee. I was on that committee for 13 years, and it was because it was related to teaching, it matched my appointment. But you know what else it allowed me to do? Every single graduation ceremony, I was in the room with all the deans and all the administrators from across the university because I was in charge of getting them on the stage. So every semester, I was in a room with all of them, and I got to get to know them campus-wide. So there's ways to be strategic about your service where you truly are providing a service, but it's actually strengthening your program. So you can also identify ways to learn new skills and make new contacts. So really, service can be very valuable, but if you're an assistant professor or even an associate professor, frankly, you have no business serving on a parking ticket committee for the university, you know. Serve on, leave that to the full professors later on down the line. Now, when it comes to your CV, so your CV is not just a list, right? It's not just a laundry list of all these things that I've done. Certainly you have publications list, grants list, but this is the place where you tell your story, okay? So you are writing this. This is a document that you are writing. You're not just typing up a list, right? You are actually writing something, and each area of your appointment should have a narrative. So that's where you describe what you've been doing. You describe it in the context of the larger discipline. So how does my area of landscape horticulture actually fit into the broader discipline? Well, I'm in green infrastructure, and I work with colleagues in landscape architecture and building science. And I also work with people in water quality, and I'm a piece of an interdisciplinary team. So what is it that you're doing? Why is that important? And how does it fit into the broader narrative? And what are those impacts that you're generating? And then also it's a time for you to kind of, as Dr. Clark mentioned, mention your trajectory, right? Do you expect continued productivity? How are things coming together? How is your program growing? So there's an important piece of your CV where you actually write in paragraph style what it is you're doing and why it's important and how it fits into the broader discipline. This was another point that was just brought up. Is your national and international reputation. One of the best ways to do that is being involved in this society and other professional societies. That includes national, international, and regional through giving presentations, chairing sessions. That's a great way to do that. That's generally, in many cases, not too much work, but that's an area of service, right, that can support the development of your CV and grow your contacts. Being on committees, again, being mindful of your time when you're an assistant professor, but there's some ways that you can do that that can help get your name out there and get recognition. That could lead to invited presentations. It could lead to you being invited to serve on review panels. And what it comes down to when it comes time for tenure is that someone who has never actually worked with you directly should be able to, on the basis of your CV and what they know of your reputation through meetings, they should be able to comment on your program. They should be aware of what you've been up to, what your students are doing, and the impact that you're having. And in terms of content and format, Dr. Clark mentioned this also, start early. So one of the best advice I ever got was the dean at the time when I started my first academic position. He said, download the section from the faculty handbook that has all the sections for promotion and tenure, and then start filling in the blanks, right? So that meant I had some sections that were empty. That's okay. I knew what I needed to work on and where I needed to fill in the gaps. So start early and build that up over time. You're going to have some guidelines at your university about the format, the content, what needs to go in there. And again, like Dr. Clark said, you also want to talk to other colleagues. I found a colleague that was about years ahead of me in the promotion process in another department. It wasn't even in horticulture, but I knew his reputation, and I said, can I see your CV every time you went for a promotion? I said, can I see what it looked like? What was on there? And so looking at CVs from other people that you know have been successful, that have been timely in their promotion and tenure process, that have been successful at getting academic jobs, look at those, and that can really give you some good guidance. So sometimes I wonder if I actually do just prefer working in a deadline-induced panic. You know, it would seem that way at times, so, but I like to say I'm not a procrastinator. Okay, and then one other piece that I want to mention that you'll be using when you either apply for an academic position or when you go for promotion and tenure is a summary sheet and potentially your cover letter. It's so helpful to someone who's reviewing lots and lots of packets to have a summary letter or a cover letter that really highlights the main takeaway things. These are the big projects I was a part of. This was the impact. This is why it's important. Because sometimes it's hard, if it's not your exact discipline, sort of wading through a list of publications, it's hard to know what to make of that, you know? But you can tell the reader, the reviewer, what to take home from that, summarizing your accomplishments, providing a narrative context, and sometimes bulleted paragraphs and lists, that can be helpful more than just, you know, straight prose. So really thinking about, what is the best way that you can really get the most important message in front of the people who are reviewing that packet, whether it's for a position or for promotion and tenure? All right, so in conclusion, CV should tell a story, right? This is your academic life. That's literally what CV stands for. And so it's your responsibility to write that story to make it clear to the reader. So when I used to teach experimental methods, this is a class for all graduate students, I say, what's the best way to learn how to write? So what is the best way to learn how to write? To write, that's exactly right. It's not read. I mean, you can learn some. No, I'm sorry, it's read. It's not write, right? The best way to learn how to write is to read, right? Read other CVs, read things that you documents of people who have been successful. And so the best way to learn how to write is to read. Ask for input early and often. Find a mentor you trust. And be sure to develop a well-balanced CV with strength in all areas, right? Not just not just research, right? Demonstrate strength in all areas of your appointment. So we have time for, you all are students, so you're not going to do this, but if it were faculty, I would say we have time for just one long-winded, self-indulgent question that relates to nothing we've been talking about. So I don't know if we have time for, okay, so time for questions.
Long-winded question.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Well, you just knocked him right out of the room, didn't you?
Yes.
What do you think about CV performance? Like a very easy one or these very fancy sort of colors and designs?
It needs to be the question is about CV format. Should it be sort of simple and straightforward? Should be colorful, have designs? It definitely really needs to be very easy to read. It should not be in color. It should be just very straightforward, professional looking, easy to navigate, write clear what the sections are. For example, sometimes you'll have a paper that you know, maybe it's relating to a publication, maybe relating to teaching, and you want to put it in your list of teaching publications. But there's also reason to include it in your research publications. You just want to make things like that very clear that you're not double counting, you know, that you say it also appears somewhere else. So a very clean format, easy to read, no graphics really. I shouldn't say no. There is time and place where you could have some graphics in there. But generally, it should be very simple. Yes?
What do you think is the average number of pages that a CV should have? You know, folks may be doing a lot of stuff, and you have to move on to something. So, page, 2 pages?
So, the question is about the number of pages that your CV should be, and it really should be the appropriate number of pages to tell the story. So, you don't inflate with things perhaps that are not helpful to the reader, but you do want to include everything that is directly applicable to the position that you're applying for, whether it's a new academic position or promotion and tenure. There's not a restriction, there's not a limit, right, on the number of pages in a CV. But we've all seen the CVs that are like this, and it's like, well, that's when the summary page comes in handy, right? So there's not a limit. So it's just as many pages as that it takes to talk about what you've accomplished.
One thing I would just emphasize on that is if you work a long time, you're going to get a lot of accomplishments. And if you, and I'm talking about tenure or whatever, but if you're talking about going up for awards and things of that nature, you're going to need a good record, or somewhere you may submit the whole thing. Okay, so having a two-page one that highlights things is what you want to get the routine of doing. But then you need to have the whole kitchen sink somewhere so you can count all this stuff up.
And you need to have that every year. You update the full document, which, just like you said, with everything.
Maybe a little worse than going to the dentist. But if you don't do it, let's see, I'm going to work this in a good analogy. Your professional record will decay. Because you can't remember what you did. Okay? That's a big item. I saw one once that was 250 pages. I'm a horticulturist. I think mine's only like 80. I thought, well, you did a lot more than I did. Well, maybe also a lot more stuff now.
We have one more question.
I just wanted to add something to that. It may be helpful to have a table of contents as it gets longer.
Yeah.
So you can have a table of everything. And my suggestion is keep that file on your desktop. Every time you do something, don't wait to do it once a year. Keep it constantly updated, because there will be things that will drop through the cracks and forget about it. And when you do your annual, if you do an annual update, when you go for review your calendar. If you keep an electronic calendar and you put appointments down, things you did, places you went, review your calendar and use that as a means to update it again. It needs to be complete. You don't want to not have things in there that you can get credit for, that somebody that values.
All right, let's thank our speaker. Thank you, Amy.